Dr. Vincent Medici welcomes you to Straight Talk on Health. For more information on Talk Radio's best kept secret, go to straighttalk.cc. Dr. Medici, a legend in his own mind, has suffered numerous nervous breakdowns and hopes that you will forgive this show. Hiyo Silver! Today's show will be on exercise, which Dr. Medici gets when riding his horse, Silver.
Good morning. This is Crooked Talk on Health. And I'm Dr. Vincent Medici, and I'm your host today. And this is a great, great day to do a show on stress, as you can well understand. So I'm going to take advantage of the moment and explain to you, and this is true, and I can't prove it to you, but if I could, it would blow your mind. Under a stressful morning like this, when everything just goes backwards, I can take a breath, and you can probably hear it in the composure in my voice, and I can use my breath to completely and totally clean my body out. Now, that's a phenomenon I think that you have. You might relate to it when you're at the hairdresser and you get yourself a massage, like they massage the head and it feels so good. Or if you've ever gone and had reflexology on the foot, or if a loved one gives you a little neck rub and it just feels great. I can do that with my breath. And for very obvious reasons, I just did that this morning. I could even fire half my staff, which I would never do. Sometimes I think I should. But if I did, I can take a breath and I can bring myself into that state. That's the power of breath. And that's the power of exercise if you understand the principles. And some of these principles I'm going to run you through today. So whether you like to run, lift weights, dance, do Pilates, yoga, basketball, boxing, or the martial arts, however you want to move your body, before the show concludes today, I will deliver you a new perspective on exercise. Because in America, we don't understand it. And we hurt ourselves and we think we're helping ourselves. Also, if you've got chronic illness, hang in. Because if you barely have enough energy to move your body, I'll have advice for you also. So, first rule of engagement, here we go. When you're getting back on the trail, do not compare yourself to others. Do not compare yourself to 20 years ago. Now, I know you know this, but I'm going to say this anyway, because when you sit across my desk in the office, secretly, and I pull it out of you, you make this mistake. You get depressed. Because it's not 20 or 30 years ago. Now, it's human nature to do this, okay? And that's understandable, all right? But you've created this false standard of excellence for yourself. This is the way it's going to be when I get back on the track or the dance floor or the gym. I'm 50 or 55 or 60. My cardiologist told me I better shape it up or I'm up for bypass surgery. And you hit that gym and you do one of two things. You pretend you're 20, which you're not, or the second fatal move you make. You look at mirrors. Mirrors, yes. Health spas should not have mirrors if they want to have population at their spa, because the mirror thing is a disaster, especially starting out. And I watch people do this all the time, and it's a mistake, because what you do is you watch the other person look at themselves in the mirror, and then you look at yourself in the mirror. And the whole thing becomes pump the iron, do the spin class, and then look at yourself in the mirror. And when you don't see what you like, what you want, all you can do, especially when you look at someone else, is you just get reminded of all the work you've got to do, all the work that lies ahead. So in the beginning, especially, stay away from mirrors. Little stuff, but it's big stuff. Now for the big stuff. Let's talk about muscle, about strength, endurance, about power, pound for pound. If the muscle is not flexible, it gradually loses efficiency. You'll lose strength, endurance, and power. People know this in some vague way. You know you have to stretch. You understand that, but nobody does it. Very few people, from your weekend warriors to your Olympic athletes, really stretch. I watch the Olympians all the time. I've helped some of them. None of them stretch. Well, they do stretch, but they don't ever get flexible. Other than the gymnasts and the dancers and some martial artists. Nobody else does it. Track and field, forget it.
all the heavier games, the boxings, the basketball, so on and so forth. They skip this critical step. Yeah, they stretch, but they don't ever get really flexible, and that's my point. So here's the acid test for you. Within the last 6 months of your workout, have you gotten 50% more flexible in your hamstrings, your adductors, your quadriceps, your rectus femoris, meaning your thigh muscles, the twist and side stretches, the psoas muscle, which we'll talk about later, and I'll describe all these muscles if you don't understand where they are, the pectoralis muscles in the chest, the scalenes in the neck? Is your stretch routine designed so you can approximate back bend or wheel, as some call it? That's that yoga or gymnastic stretch where you look like an upside down U. Some approximation of that stretch are you constantly doing, like a rolled up towel underneath your spine, just at the bottom of your shoulder blades? Because if your muscles are contracting, and if those, and they are contracting if you're moving, and you haven't stretched the muscle and gotten it flexible, the muscle will lose its power and it will strain. If you put a stress on it and it's contracted when it should be stretched, it'll strain, tear, and even avulse. And that's how you start destroying your joints. This is so fundamental. I'm going to say it in a different way. When you use a muscle, it contracts, which is to say it shortens. Now, ideally, you would stretch that muscle back to its original length or elongate it. But if you don't stretch, eventually that muscle stays short or, in a sense, contracted. Then you go to the gym as you attempt to contract an already contracted muscle, and you notice that you've lost your spring. You're not bouncy on your feet. Your muscles seem like they're straining to get the job done, and eventually you'll strain or even tear the muscle. Not to mention, it's going to get to the joint. You'll destroy your joint that way. All this joint replacement that's done each year in America, absolutely unnecessary. If you're 50 or 60, and you listen to what I'm saying today, you won't have your joints replaced. And if you're borderline right now and you listen to what I say, you will never need that joint replacement. And those joint replacements are costly in so many ways. Avoid them as much as you humanly can. This is the way to do it. The harder you train, for you heavy athletes, the more flexible you must become. Now, this relationship between flexibility and efficiency of motion is not just about exercise. It's related to health in a very, very deep way. So we're going to take this to another level. And if you sit at a desk all day and you're not an athlete, you need to understand this just as much because of that. Okay. So the acid test of your workout routine is to design it to give enough priority to improving your flexibility by 50% over 6 months in the muscle groups I've described, which I'll get into later again. Now, here's another key. Every muscle you stretch should shift your alignment. Now, I'm introducing another concept, and it's up to you to feel that concept over time in your body. So let me lay out the concept. So let me repeat it. Every muscle you stretch should shift your alignment. I'll say it differently. With the completion of every stretch routine, you should feel a change in your posture. Your weight should shift to your heels. Your head and neck should feel lighter. And it should feel like your neck is backwards, like your head is backwards in a sense. Your shoulders should feel like they're opposed to slouching forward. Like your shoulders just fall backwards easily, and that's very comfortable. It would be uncomfortable to slouch forward. That's what the result of great stretching does. The feet should feel flatter and wider on the floor. Your gait or stride should have greater spring or resilience. Now, if you've not gotten flexible enough to the point where you feel a deep shift in your alignment as a result of your stretch routine, just keep going. Be patient. It may take months. Some people it's going to take a year. So if you start that with it in mind, if your muscles aren't flexible enough yet, if the stretch doesn't get into the joint, you're not going to shift your alignment initially. But eventually you will. And who's ever training you or wherever you're taking counsel from, whether it's Pilates, yoga, just a sports coach, or just what you read, this is where you have to go, to a physical shift in your posture, in your alignment. Now, if you get to that point, and it's not that hard to do, these dramatic alignment shifts will protect the joint. The joint will not injure then. So here's another principle. When the alignment, which you're shifting as you stretch, when the alignment from head to feet is easily maintained, which means that your posture is correct, your biomechanics is correct, the weight of the body is dissipated or distributed through the joints at the correct angles. So the low back vertebra, L1, L2, L3, L4, L5, they take the compressive force when you're walking or running in the part of the vertebra, the body of the vertebra, that was designed to take the compressive force. The knees take the weight of the body through the part of the knee that the knee was designed to take all the weight of the body. Same for the ankle and foot. And then in the day-to-day, as you shift your body into all the different positions that we do in everyday life, fixing the car, carrying the baby, lifting weights at the gym, as we shift our body's position into a perfect alignment, no matter what position we're in, so that at all times the weight's being driven through that part of the low back, the knee, the ankle, that was designed to accommodate that weight. That is a feeling, and it's a feeling we're going to talk about. It's something you learn. It's something you must learn as you learn to exercise. It's something your children in high school track and football and baseball and basketball and dance must learn, and they're not taught it. And this is the travesty. And this is why joints unnecessarily tear. And this is why there are so many joint replacements ultimately. So if you're flexible, you score. And if you're not, that alignment shift doesn't happen. And then you put all this weight into the joint, and then the weight distributes incorrectly through the wrong part of the joint, and you got it. You've got a tear, or you deteriorate. Okay. Now, the point that I really made is the foundation for an entire branch of medicine that's just as big as nutrition. So you guys understand nutrition. You listen to nutrition shows. You take supplements, so on and so forth. You have to understand there's another field just as big as nutrition. It's called structural medicine. It's as big as nutritional medicine. So that when we say acid reflux, headaches, joint pain, inability to compete successfully as an athlete, that your heart disease or infertility is structurally based, that's a new paradigm. It may be new to you in a sense, but the very essence of osteopathy, chiropractic, Pilates, yoga, Rolfing, Hellawork, Tai Chi, Qigong, Kung Fu, Egoscue, the list is endless. All were fostered by extremely educated scientists who drove home the point that structure determined function, that your posture would create a freedom from your pain, that anatomy determines physiology, that your spine is designed to flex like a snake, each segment of that spine articulating at a slightly different angle than the other segment, so that when you're 20, we move like a dancer or the break dancer, the head bobbing one way, the neck the other way, the rib cage still another, the pelvis swinging back and forth freely and easily without fatigue, so that by the time we're 60 or 70, we move like a big box on feet being crushed under the burden of our weight. The head, the neck, the rib cage, the spine, the pelvis, and the legs, functionally speaking, become glued into one single segment. And then we wonder what happened to our golf game, or why taking out the trash hurts so much, or why we're up for joint replacement. And those joints, yes, they wear out that way because the forces going through the joints are not correct. They are not at the right vectors, we say. And then we're treated like that's normal because we're old. And then we're told we're arthritic and that we should have our joints replaced. And as long as we're going to replace one knee, let's replace the other because it's more cost effective. And surely that other knee is going to go after the first one did. And studies have proven that. I know I hit home with this. I am sure I am talking to dozens in the audience that have been told looming in their future is joint replacement. It is not necessary. Understand that your joint pain and deterioration begins with an inflexible, misaligned spine. And if you continue to exercise without regard to flexibility, you will fulfill your worst nightmare, and it's so unnecessary. But you know, that statement is at the surface of this issue. There's a muscle called the psoas, P-S-O-A-S. It looks like the trunk of a tree when you dissect it out as a body. In school, I dissected, I guess, about 100 different bodies thoroughly. And you open up the abdominal cavity. You work through the fat. You tear open the muscles. You pull out the guts. And underneath all of that abdomen are these two massive muscles on either side, deep into your abdomen, underneath your intestines. They look like the trunks of a tree, a marvelous, mysterious muscle, controlling more than you can imagine. And if that muscle stays flexible into your old age, you really will not have old age. So the psoas, P-S-O-A-S, originates from your lumbar vertebra and ties it into your upper thigh bone. When it contracts, you walk or run. When it contracts powerfully, you can kick down a wall. When you make this muscle flexible, it changes your life. And when it's not, it's potentially lethal to your health. Because as it shortens, it does something bizarre. As this muscle shortens, it displaces forward and crushes your guts. That means undue compression. Compression as it displaces forward because it's shortened and because it's so deep in the abdominal cavity. It shortens and it comes forward. And your large intestine, small intestine, liver, spleen, pancreas, ovaries, uterus, bladder, everything that's in the abdominal cavity gets crushed, compressed relentlessly under this brute of a muscle. Now, to make it worse, it's worse than that. Once the muscle shortens and displaces forward, it brings with it, it torques, it twists the entire lumbosacral nerve plexus. This means it crushes the nerve supply to your organs. Now, you have to understand this is a gradual process. And the negative effects of it, we just call that aging. But you guys know better. The nerve plexus, or central junction box, is the electrical supply to your organs. So you think of the organs like the uterus, the ovaries, the prostate, the large and small intestine, like little motors that run on electricity. And when that muscle, the psoas, is short, tight, when it shifts forward, when it's never been stretched because people, including most of your healthcare practitioners, have no real functional relationship with it. They've heard of it. They talk about it, but they don't really understand how to work with it. The electrical supply to those little motors we call organs is reduced or suppressed. Now, you don't go running off to the doctor screaming that your psoas is compressed. It's compressing your nerves and ruining your organ systems, but that's really what's occurring. Can one tight, inflexible, spatially disoriented muscle dominate your entire physiology, the entire organ function of an entire body? This is what you do. You Google up the name Ida Rolf / psoas muscle, P-S-O-A-S, in your spare time, which you don't have, but do it anyway. And read about a woman, a brilliant woman, with a doctorate in chemistry, biochemistry, from Columbia, who pioneered things at the Rockefeller Institute in New York City. She was the elite of the elite, left the entire profession, and devoted the bulk of her life to teaching the public, as well as doctors, how deeply a tight, incompetent psoas muscle could negatively affect organ function. So what are you going to do? I'm going to list the muscles that you're going to get flexible to the point where you can feel your flexibility shifting your alignment, shifting the way you come down on your feet. Remember, I didn't say stretch. I said get flexible. You see, stretch is the whatever it is, the noun. The point is, you can stretch, but you have to get flexible. You see the change at 30, 40, 50% improvement in flexibility. Don't fall into that delusion thinking that just because you're stretching, it's happening. You have to get the result. Shifting your alignment, shifting the way you come down on your feet. So, the psoas, you're going to learn to stretch. We'll talk about that in a moment. The hamstrings. Those are the muscles behind the thigh. The thigh muscles, especially the rectus femoris, the calves. The Achilles tendon, which is that thick, ropey band just above your heel. The adductors. Those are the muscles you close your legs with. The piriformis. That's the muscle deep in your buttocks. The pectoralis minor in your breast muscle, deep. The scalenes in your neck. And last but not least, the muscles of the jaw. No one stretches out the jaw. Your animals do. Your dog does all day. 5, 6, 7 times a day. An animal opens its jaw. You know why it does that? Oh, I could do a whole show on why it does that. You don't have brain function if you don't pull those muscles. Those muscles in the jaw should be as flexible as, say, the person that bends forward and can palm the floor with their hands. Your muscles in the jaw should be as flexible as those hamstrings in the person who can palm the floor. And yet we don't even stretch them ever. We don't even have a concept of it. Those of you attending my class, which should start in about a month, you're going to learn a lot about these muscles. Otherwise, go to your health spas, your Pilates instructor, your yoga classes. Ask your chiropractors, your massage therapists. Get them to work on this. Learn about it yourself. Ask them to design a program, a stretch program contoured to you. You need to see them once or twice to do this. That's how you should be using your healthcare practitioner. Not this ridiculous deal where you have to come back every single week or two or three forever and ever and ever. Get them to teach you how to heal yourself with programs that are contoured to you. Use their expertise for this way. So I'm going to leave this to you. Even if you get on YouTube, there's an endless amount of how-to on flexibility. My job, the job of Straight Talk on Health, is the why-to. Okay, I'm going to talk about something different for a moment. One of my goals in this show was to start giving my endorsement to healthcare practitioners, people that I could give the gold star to, that I could trust to send out to you. And I'm going to try over the years to come to make this the beginning of a referral source. So after they pass my gold standard, I can get them to you. And we can move the ball on this. And then we can create dialogue between ourselves and them and you and bring up the bar. I'm going to bring a guy on the show pretty soon who got sick, young man, fantastically healthy, and in a single year and a half, he spent $150,000 on quacks. Quacks are out there. They're in holistic medicine everywhere. Across 4 educations myself, I've gone to school with lots of them. People that don't care. People that twist the essence of energetic, biological medicine into nothing more than patients and running them through like the mill. And what we want to do, using each other in this age of communication, is to create a better standard so we can drive the essences of these things. I spent 4 years in chiropractic school. I was the valedictorian of my class. They told me to adjust the spine, and there's nothing wrong with that. That's a wonderful thing. So this is not a criticism in that respect, but nobody developed real programs to teach people to stretch with the integrity that Rolf brought to it, that yoga, Pilates brought to it. You see? So we've educated people, and innocently, I think, more often than not innocently, we've omitted the essences of the paradigm. And this is one classic example. The hospitals are filled with people, 60, 70 plus, having their joints replaced. And if you listen to this, it's not necessary. Outside of traumatic crushes to the joint in accidents, it's just not necessary. So I'm going to start bringing these people on the show, having them share with you what they've given their life to develop. and I will endorse them for their fine work and contribution. And this is the way it should work. This is a win-win for everyone. And I'll start this within a few months. Okay, off to other topics. Strength training, weights. So let's get away from flexibility. Let's talk about weights. Strength training, things we like to do. Power. You have to train the tendon and put less emphasis on the muscle. If you use weights, it's not about your muscles. It's about your tendons. Generally, the emphasis is cosmetic, to make the muscle look bigger. And from a functional standpoint, this is not necessary. This is a mistake in a sense. This is useless. Let me say it differently. Pound for pound, what has more strength, a leopard or an elephant? The leopard is pound for pound much stronger than the elephant. And that's because the leopard is largely a tendon. The tendon is the connective tissue that connects the muscle to the bone. The tendons are those fibrous, cord-like tissues that you feel behind the knee, behind the ankle, like the Achilles tendon. Tendons all over your neck. Tendons inside your elbow, inside your wrist. And when you pump iron and you lift weights, you must begin the contraction from a deeply stretched position. Now, that's the key. When you lift the weights, you have to begin the contraction from a deeply stretched position. I'll give you an example, and you'll get the point. Chin-ups. If you're doing a chin-up, you hang from the bar and begin the chin-up from the fully lengthened position, not from the half position or the quarter position. You have to let yourself fully hang. Why? Because the tendon is strengthened in the first 10% of the contraction. The rest is just muscular contraction. So if you're going to lengthen the tendon, if you're going to strengthen the tendon must be fully extended, as it would be if you were hanging from a bar about to do a chin-up. And you can see why we see people all the time cheat that exercise, meaning they do one chin-up, let themselves down halfway, and then contract up the bar again. Let themselves down halfway and contract up the bar again. That only builds the muscle. It doesn't build the tendon. And we do this with weights all the time. What you're supposed to do is let yourself hang down all the way and then pull up. If you really want to advance that, let yourself hang down all the way and then contract up only 20% and then do 10 or 20 of those. That builds tendon. Better than that, put on a weighted vest, say 15 to 20 to 25 pounds, a weighted vest, and then do the chin-up up to that 20% contraction with the added weight. That builds the tendon even more. Then better than that, add that weighted vest, 10 to 15 to 20 pounds, and do that chin-up 20%, but come up rapidly, come up in burst, then drop to full extension, and then chin up to 20% rapidly in a burst. That makes your tendons like steel, and it doesn't really build the muscle. So the ratio of strength, the ratio of what creates power, shifts to the tendon. You do 20 in a row chin-ups, 10 chin-ups in a row, from a fully extended position in burst pattern with 10 to 15 to 20 pounds of weight on the chest. And you'll build a dynamic body, the body of a leopard. And you can adapt that tendon strengthening concept to almost any muscle in the body. What you want, male or female, is tendon strength like the leopard. But the other way around is really how people usually train with weights. Whether it's strength training or bodybuilding, there's all this emphasis on the muscle and less emphasis on the tendon, which is why so many people hurt themselves training with weights. On top of the inflexibility that we just mentioned, they neglect the tendon. But it's the strength of the tendon that protects the joint. If you bulk the muscle without strengthening the tendon, you're going to get a tendonitis sooner or later. And if you train like that and then you go out and you do sports, you're setting yourself up bad. All these painful tendonitises, plantar, the Achilles, elbow, wrist, shoulder, sustained precisely because people, including athletes, do not understand how to train the tendon. Now, in the martial arts, they use very sophisticated techniques to strengthen the tendons without giving much attention to the muscles. And they do so because they want, like a martial artist should, tremendous strength and speed, independent of size. In other words, small, toned muscles with well-developed tendons that give the martial artist enormous force of contraction when delivering a strike. And that is the leopard. Another concept, runners and dancers, all athletes, but especially those two, must learn center. In other words, you have to stretch until your alignment shifts you into that springy, light on your feet feeling. So when you start jogging and dancing, you start slow. Then you stretch again. And then you speed up a little. And then you stretch again. And do not accelerate your intensity until you feel center. That's that alignment shift. But it's a key moment as you decide whether you're going to accelerate into your sport, your game, your passion, your weekend hobby. And if you don't have that experience in your body, all right, as I said, either listen to the show again, straighttalk.cc, get on the website, listen to the show again, or get somebody in the community, in the holistic field. Sports trainers abound. Coaches are everywhere offering their services, and get them to teach you this. It may be something they overlook. Find one that gets it. Then once you know center, that's the key on the track, etc., to begin to accelerate the workout. If the runners tend to get knee pain, back pain, foot pain, one thing you can do if you have that is shift the run to an incline. Little trick about running, take it on the incline when you're rehabbing. Get to know that if you're really going uphill, 2 to 3 miles, walking or running up the hill, it's the easiest thing to do biomechanically on your joints. And Southern California's got tons of these types of places. Uphill walking, uphill running. Safest way to walk, run, because the incline drives the weight of the person through the correct part of the joint from head to toe. Then you just have to get creative, because when you get to the top of the hill, it's time to come down, and downhill is the worst thing for your joints. So unless you can trust coming down the hill backwards, get creative. In other words, drive, have someone drive the car to the top of the hill and wait for you. Something like that changes the whole workout program. It builds the muscles in the right places. It strengthens core. It puts you into biomechanical alignment in the exercise instead of pushing yourself out of it on a flat plane. The treadmill, of course, at an incline for the same reasons. But if you can get outside in nature for the run, much, much better. Now, if you don't have that luxury, you've got to be indoors. If you've got to get your cardio indoors, cross train. This means just don't do the treadmill at the incline. Get to the Stairmaster for 15 minutes. Get to the ski machine or whatever the latest gizmo in your gym that they've purchased. Get to the heavy bag for 15 minutes. Jump rope if you can. Circuit train for 30 minutes. The point is, if you're indoors, you have to mix up the cardio. Always better if you're cardio addicted to work a variety of muscles in cardio. But lots of people don't do that because they get addicted to dance or running or boxing or spin classes. No problem. But you must do this. You have to, if you have an exercise addiction, you've got to get 2 days per week where you simply strengthen your tendons, weight training, as I described. You see, because your cardio exercise alone is not going to give you adequate strength or flexibility to prevent injury. Cardio people have to cross train. Dancers must cross train for exactly the same reason. Nothing is harder on the body than dancing. Nothing. Real dancing. Or social dancing. When you're just doing it 4, 5, 6 hours on a Friday or a Saturday night, that's tough on the body. And if you love that because that's your social life, you have to stay flexible. and you have to weight train twice a week to sustain what you're doing on weekends. Yoga, we see the same mistake being made with yoga. Yoga is fantastic. It's what I'd recommend along with Pilates for the flexibility part of this segment. But you see, there's the same kind of dogma in yoga. The yoga community spends years in classes trying to master the strength poses like crow or handstand or headstand. And they fail to realize that 6 months training the tendons for strength would get them to proficiency in the pose much, much faster. So you see, what people do is they don't integrate. They stay on the one thing they do. They reinforce that completely. They create imbalance because they're dogmatic. And then the body lets them know. And instead of integrating once they're injured, they fall into all these mental ruts about why they can't heal. For instance, every 2 weeks, get deep cross-fiber massage. Learn couples massage. If you're on the comeback trail or you're a serious athlete, every 2 weeks, have somebody that understands how to do it. Take your body and cross-fiber the entire body deep into the muscle, where the muscle meets the bone, where the therapist can break up the acids that build up in the muscle that will otherwise lead to adhesions, meaning muscles will stick to other muscles, and that ends proper alignment, proper drainage of acids out of the area, and the beginning of strains, and that's where you deteriorate your joint. Now, if you're exercising on a high-carb, high-blood-sugar diet, you're making N-chain glycation products, and the high insulin will turn your muscular fascial system to glue. All the more reason why, if you're on the comeback trail, if you're a serious athlete, if you're at the gym and not quite feeling like you can connect musculoskeletally, you don't have the energy, you're dragging, but you should have the energy, go to the fascial system, the myofascial system, and find someone, a myofascial therapist, deep tissue massage, somebody that understands how to get in there without killing you. They should never be pressing into you so hard you're screaming. They should press to what we call the good pain point. That's deep enough so that it hurts, but it's reasonable. And on the other side of it, you feel freed up. You feel freed up because they're pushing the acids that the muscle develops. They're pushing those acids and adhesions out of the muscle. Once a week, at least every other week. Budget it in. Okay. The world's most useless exercise is the crunch. I'm going to attack the crunch, the upper abdominal contraction. And you'll learn something about the psoas from this. Hard for people to understand that the crunch is not where the emphasis should be, because the crunch builds those six-pack abs that we associate with great physical strength. And that looks great cosmetically. The problem is that we should be focusing on the lower abs, those sit-ups with the knees bent where you are unfolding downwards, then stopping, then contracting up a bit, then unfolding downwards. So sit-ups with the knees bent, and you're coming down, unfolding down, and then you contract up a bit, and then you come down a bit, and then you come up a bit, and it's burning not in the solar plexus. It's burning in the lower abs. These are the Pilates-type sit-ups. The exercises for the lower abs, they're all over YouTube. Now, when the lower abs, this is the principle, when the lower abs are strong, the psoas is forced to lengthen. And the psoas and the rectus abdominis are antagonistic to each other. So your abs have another muscle that works antagonistically. When one contracts, the other relaxes. When the other relaxes, the other has tone. When the psoas lengthens, okay, only then can you really get a strong abdominal contraction. When the lower rectus abdominis contracts and develops tone, the psoas is forced to lengthen. If you try to contract the rectus abdominis with any kind of true power, you can't do it if the psoas doesn't lengthen. Now, these relationships, they've got to be taught to the body. These aren't things you can fully understand with words, but this is a start for you. You get a good Pilates instructor, a good yogic instructor, someone that really understands motion in the human body. And they'll understand how to teach these relationships. Because really, no matter how many crunches you do, the functional strength of the upper abdominals is controlled by flexibility in the psoas. Now, there's another muscle that plays into this, and that's a muscle in the thigh called the rectus femoris. And this muscle is a synergist to the psoas. So when we say the psoas allows you to walk, to kick, to run, the rectus femoris in the thigh is doing the same thing. It's assisting the psoas. See, but the truth is you can't stretch the psoas unless you first stretch the quad out. Flexible quads are much bigger than we understand. Much bigger. So the trick is to stretch the psoas. The trick to stretching the psoas is to stretch the thigh muscle, the rectus femoris, in what we call the hurdler's stretch. Hurdler's stretch. That's the famous runner stretch used to stretch the thighs. You're sitting on the floor with one leg straight out in front and the other leg folded back and behind you, as in the kneeling position. So one leg is tucked under, the other leg is straight, and you're sitting on your buttocks. Now the kneeling leg, the leg that's bent, has the top of the foot downward on the carpet. Okay? Again, these stretches are all over YouTube under the hurdler stretch. And once you're in this position, you begin to lean backward until you feel the tension in your thigh. And then gradually over time, you work the pose. So over a period of months, you can go back all the way without arching your back. Without arching your back until you hit the ground. If you can successfully navigate the stretch, so the thigh muscles are flexible, and you can get your back to the ground without arching your back, you're going to begin to contact your psoas. You're going to begin to feel a muscle in your lower abdomen that you didn't even know was there get stretched. You'll begin to access the tension of the psoas. And when you do that, you will feel a profound shift in your alignment, a profound shift in your posture. You will feel a resilience and a spring in your legs like you haven't known since you were 20. But you've got to get through the flexibility issue in the thigh. And then you've got to start to work the psoas. Then you're using your psoas and your rectus abdominis relationship. You're working those two, psoas and rectus abdominis, to create core strength. And that's where you build out from. You build out from there, creating a sense of core, a sense of center, a sense of an alignment shift. The return on that is worth all the weight training in the world, all the running in the world, all the dieting in the world, all the herbs in the world. There is nothing in muscular enhancement that's more important than building core. But you really got to understand this psoas rectus relationship. You've got a head start. Google up the name Ida Rolfe. You'll see the amount of work, the amount of study, the amount of practical clinical experience with people. Another topic, how do you eat for the workout? This might be the only place I can say something nice about the carbs. If, especially in the beginning of your transition back to health, your liver may not sustain your blood sugar, and you're going to need your blood sugar when you work out. So give yourself that space. If you've got to do a carb on the comeback trail, hit the carbs enough to give you enough glycogen, enough sugar into the blood to sustain the workout. And then after the workout, drink, drink, and drink until you feel true hunger set in. So it's carb, workout, drink, 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 and then you hit the animal protein. Do not eat the carb after the workout. All the fat-burning stimulus you just gave your body flushes right down the drain with carbs after the workout. Of course, the other point is you're going to need high-quality animal protein and raw fat to sustain the growth and repair that you're going to need after the workout. So, carbs if you must, never after the workout. Here's another one. Lots of people live with depression or mania for reasons none other than that they're coded genetically to exercise vigorously a good 90 minutes per day. They make so much hormone that to balance hormone, they need to burn it off by intense exercise. And if they don't know this, and they're cooped up in some office job, eventually they get depressed. And if they aren't given a genetically friendly perspective, the next thing they know, they're being given antidepressant or anti-anxiety drugs. The truth is, they should be given new jobs outdoors. Now, if that's not reality, and you fit the bill, you got to find a way to work 75 or 90 minutes of intense physical exercise into your life. Only you're the type, in this case, of person, you've got to do it outdoors. Slow down the pace, but get outdoors. There will be something about you in nature that will balance your neurological system. O blood types, especially fit this mold. American Indians as a rule, African Americans as a rule, Norwegians, the Welsh, Mongolians, Eastern Europeans, but not Romanians, Germans, but those usually from Northern Germany. This is just a small list of people on the globe who still resonate to a tribal nomadic concept. And they cannot sedate their bodies effectively unless they exercise vigorously in nature. Now, if you're sick, if you're barely able to summon the energy to sustain exercise, go into nature, even if it's 5 minutes a day. That's your exercise. Hit the beach. Hit the most beautiful part of the forest. Drive there and sit there 10 minutes a day. Take a nap in nature. Do something outside. And when you start feeling better, don't measure your improvement by going back to household maintenance chores. I see this all the time. You spend 6 months with somebody, they start to feel better. They come back, they're upset, and it's because they tried to paint their house. Or they decided to renew their kitchen. Because they used to be able to do that, and they're sure if they're better now, this would be the perfect test. It's the worst test. As you're coming back to life, get outside. Use nature to heal. Even if you have to drive a half an hour to get 15 minutes of those nature vibes in, the earth's resonances, do it. And then increase that to a couple of times a day. And then increase that to 3 times a day. Instead of 20 minutes once a day to exhaustion, stay outside 10 minutes twice a day. It really works that way. We'll see you next week. This is Straight Talk on Health, Dr. Vincent Medici. Have a good week.